Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opel, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Time now for our Friday gathering. I'm joined in studio by Jennifer Carol McNeil, Fine Gael TD for Dunleary, Matt Carthy, Sinn Féin TD for Cavan Monaghan, Elaine Loughlin, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. Alan Barrett is here too, director of the Economic and Social Research Institute. Before we start, let's have a reminder now of the week gone by.
I commend this budget to the House.
I commend this budget to the House.
A good journey to a better Ireland is within our grasp.
This budget is a reflection on the government that delivered it. Out of touch, out of ideas and out of time.
So you're going to spend less and make it cheaper at the same time?
No, it's
not. How are you going to do that?
No.
House prices are out of reach for me and I'm a top-rate taxpayer.
We pay €1,715 a month in childcare fees.
It is an enormous amount of money.
The carbon tax is one-tenth of the increase. It's less than one-tenth.
If you have a person who lives in Tobercurry and they work in Sligo Town, what is carbon tax going to do for them?
This is incredibly cynical.
They can't. You simply have no other options for many people living...
Brian O'Connell's report about Adam Terry, who's 10. He's been waiting over 4 years for urgent scoliosis surgery. Surely to God, people like Adam should be top of the list rather than giving everybody a fiver.
I don't believe that money is the constraint there.
I don't think it's good enough, quite frankly.
We're on a knife edge here. All of the indicators of the disease have quite suddenly gone in the wrong direction.
In 8 days' time, we could be opening nightclubs.
We could. Every day of data matters.
There's a need now for all of us to knuckle down.
Boris Johnson did tell me personally that he would, after agreeing to the protocol, sign up to changing that protocol and indeed tearing it up.
Ian Paisley Jr. spoke last night also about the protocol as like the Ten Commandments. Maybe we all need to turn the other cheek.
And Al, who put that together on the team, is watching Succession. So you won't be surprised at the music there on that one. So now to our panel. Elaine, I want to start with you because this COVID story, concerns about increasing cases, increasing hospitalizations, where is it leading us to? We've got Cabinet next Tuesday. What are you hearing about what decisions might be taken?
Yeah, and it does seem that there is an awful lot of pressure on government now to go ahead with that full reopening on October 22nd. We do have, you know, nightclubs and other areas that haven't opened in 19 months now, and they've had false dawns before, and it really would not be a good look for the government to have to pause that reopening again. What we are looking at is maybe the reopening with a few alterations. We heard both the Taoiseach and Minister Simon Harris out yesterday suggesting that the COVID certs could be retained, that you'd have to show them to prove you either had full vaccination or you have had COVID in the past 6 months on entering a nightclub or other restaurant bar, as is the case now. We're also hearing today that perhaps masks may be retained in places where it was expected that they wouldn't be mandatory from October 22nd. So it won't be a full pause, but we are expecting perhaps not quite the same reopening as had been on the cards right up until last week. This has come as quite the surprise, even it appears to the health experts who didn't anticipate this upwards, I don't want to call it a surge, it's not a surge, and they don't want to alarm people in this, but the trajectory certainly has changed in the past 5 days.
Yep, and they're trying to figure out exactly why that is the case. Jennifer Carol McNeil, the use of COVID certs, extending that would be a workable solution, would you say?
It's certainly a very viable option. My colleague Gareth O'Hearn was calling for that earlier in the week, and you know, speaking to business, I think they'd rather continue to go with that than have any other alternatives. The whole effort this year has been to try to get the economy as open as possible, as safely as possible, to never take a step backwards. And if that means just taking a pause before another step forward for another couple of weeks, you know, Elaine is quite right. This came out of nowhere, as it can, as we've experienced with COVID before. And we have to just see what the facts are and respond to that. But if keeping COVID certs going for another while is it, you know, the alternative to anything else, I'd certainly be supporting that and calling for that.
Okay. And Matt Carthy, what did you make of the Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly, saying the high number of cases is partly due to Ireland's proximity to the UK?
It may well be. I think one of the things that's been extremely unhelpful, and it is a repetition of what we've seen at previous phases, is basically government ministers thinking out loud and speculating as to what will happen next week. I think that has caused huge consternation among those businesses and workers that are expecting to return back next week.
What do you mean there? What has annoyed you there on that front?
So I've heard a number of ministers, including on Morning Ireland, basically speculating as to what measures might be introduced next week. I think that's extremely unhelpful and
Simon
frustrating.
Harris.
He was the latest. He wasn't alone. We've seen government representatives talking about what may happen, what could happen, what their own ideas might be. The place to decide that is around the cabinet table. They need to provide certainty. Remember, businesses are expected to come back to work on the 22nd of October. They didn't invent that date. That was the date that was given them by government. So we now need to get the public health advice. Absolutely. We need to put in place the route that will allow those businesses to reopen, to allow people to get the side of the social contract which they entered into and have entered into since March 2020, when the vast majority of people have done everything that has been asked of them in terms of social distancing, removing themselves from society, essentially, by getting the vaccines. We have a huge take up of the vaccination programme. The flip side of that contract was that people would be able to then return to their lives.
Nobody could have foreseen what has happened in the last week, you know, that we've had this uplift in cases. I mean, government couldn't have foreseen that.
No, well, actually, NPHET predicted precisely almost what has happened, that there would be a spike in cases in as we approach the winter period. This week, it's important to recall there were 483 people on trolleys in our hospitals. On the big deficiency that has been exposed as a result of COVID, it's not one that we learned, but it's certainly been exposed, has been the failure of and the inability of our health system,
the capacity side,
with that. And it is mind-boggling, I have to say, that in this week's budget there was an additional acute bed provided for other than what had already been committed.
There's 800 acute beds been added to the system over the last year, as Matt well knows, and it is good to hear Sinn Féin on the side of public health. I remember this time last year, Mary Lou McDonald calling for the reopening of pubs and criticising the government for asking people not to come back at Christmas period. So it is good. And government representatives are responding to direct questions. What's the alternative to say, look, I don't know, I don't care. We've deep interest in supporting people. The eWIS scheme, which is one of the most important supports for hospitality, has been extended in this budget at a cost of 1.4 billion euros. That's bigger than the tax package, bigger than the welfare package. It's the most important support for business as we go through this period, and nowhere is that more important than hospitality, who have suffered more than most.
Yeah, Alan Barrett, can I bring you in here? Because if it all goes wrong and if we can't do what we were supposed to do on the 22nd, and you know, some people are talking about taking a step back actually and there being more, the need for more restrictions. Can we afford that?
Well, I mean, at one level, we can probably afford it, but we certainly don't want to go down that particular route. So just a couple of thoughts on this. My colleague, Pete Lunn, has been doing work for quite a while now. This is what's known as the social activity measure. So within the Institute, we've been tracking people over time and groups about how behaviours, have been evolving. And the thing that's coming true most clearly now is we kind of focus for a long time on people mixing more, that would have an impact on disease spread. But what actually Pete's survey is now picking up is that people are doing less of what are known as the mitigation measures. Okay, now I think anecdotally, I think a lot of people are talking about this. You see people sort of less inclined to wear masks, crowding, you know, not doing the 2 metre distancing, all these sort of things. So there does seem to be a range of things happening now that in addition to mixing, we're not doing the sort of mitigation measures that we previously should have been doing. On the COVID certs, which got a mention earlier on, I would say to say that's one of those sort of relatively inexpensive measures. Okay, you were asking Claire in terms of what we can afford. You know, I think the extension of the COVID certs is a relatively inexpensive measure that I think a lot of people would be in favour of. And let me make a blunt point. I think in some countries there's been a finding that one of the effects of certs like this has been to encourage people to get vaccinated. So to the extent that there might be people out there who didn't get vaccinated because they sort of figured, well, at a certain point I'm going to be able to do what I want to be able to do anyway, COVID certs can actually have this sort of positive effect of bluntly sort of forcing people to get vaccinated, because that is clearly still a problem. Mm-hmm. Can I just make one last point on the proximity to the UK? I think the minister might have mentioned in some sort of a contamination cushion effect or whatever like that. But actually, I think it's more in behavioural sense. If anybody of you, I've visited the UK a couple of weeks ago, if anybody has, what is striking is how different behaviours are there. And so I sort of have this image of people coming back from the UK, not so much with COVID, but with sort of, you know, behaviours that they're bringing in. And that might sort of link into some of the stuff I was talking about Pete, yeah, and this reduction in mitigation
measures. It's going to be fascinating to see what's going on, because in countries like France, where vaccination rates are lower, they don't have the same uplift in case numbers. I don't know what the explanation is.
Possibly yet. You know what I mean? This changes all the time. Mm. Couldn't agree more with what you've said about the behaviour differences in the UK. I was there a couple of weeks ago and people are openly putting their hand out to shake hands. And, you know, it's nearly quite a shock. And it's hard to, you know, socially try and elbow bump them instead. And it becomes a bit awkward. But it's true. It's like it's very, 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 very different. And perhaps some of those behaviours are changing. Naturally, as people see things getting better, it falls off the news for a couple of weeks. People's behaviours do revert back to comfort in a way. Of course they do.
And the other thing, just to build on your point, Claire, in countries where vaccination rates are lower, people might be more cautious.
Maybe.
We have this bizarre situation that, you know, for Irish people, when you meet somebody, you can say with 90% certainty that they're vaccinated. Yeah. And that probably has an impact on what we're doing.
And then the booster shots. I know we had the head of NIAC on Morning Ireland this morning. Like in the UK, Matt, they are boosting people over the age of 50, regardless of, you know, whether they're immunocompromised or not. Should we be doing that here now?
If that's what the health advice is, I'm not going to pretend to be an immunization expert, because, but I do, I've seen some of the recent studies that suggest that it is the way. There's a big ethical issue, I suppose, whether we should be providing booster shots in Ireland while there are entire swathes of the world that have no vaccination program at all in place. But if the health advice is that we can prevent a serious number of hospitalizations and deaths by rolling out an expanded booster program, because there are already people receiving booster shots at the moment. If that's what's required, then we need to put in place the mechanisms to allow that.
There is
a frustration, again, that there always appears to be a 2-week public debate around these issues before we actually get that advice. And I think that's something that we need to address as well.
Well, I think the head of the HSE, from what he said this morning, would like that decision on whether we are going to do the booster sooner rather than later, because they need to plan for it. But I wonder as well, is the ethical argument about the developing world weakened if people are starting to get sick here, if it's causing a problem in our health service?
Absolutely, absolutely. It is, the first obligation on the Irish government is to protect the Irish people. There's no question about that. So and that's why I put preface my remarks on the basis of what the advice is from the experts that we have employed to provide that advice. So my suggestion is that we encourage that advice to come quickly and that we act on it.
Okay. Jennifer?
The ethical argument about supporting both Ireland and the rest of the world has always been there, and the work that Colin Brophy in the Department of Foreign Affairs has done with COVAX, with giving away vaccinations, with putting money towards that, has been persistent since last summer. So both can happen at the same time. The question is, what do we need? If we need a booster program here, exactly what is it? When? How? And I mean, it was very encouraging to hear Paul Reid say they have the capacity to do that.
Okay. And the one thing we know is if the Irish people are asked to take a booster vaccine, they will, because they've done what they've been asked to do up until this point.
Apart from the 370,000 who aren't vaccinated or are partially vaccinated. Can we talk about the budget, Alan? We'll come to you on this first of all. Cliff Taylor in the Irish Times this morning saying that the days of the big tax giveaways are over. It's all about spending now. Is he right?
Well, certainly, if you looked at the balance of measures in the last budget, that's absolutely true. And it's really a fascinating development because, I mean, it's funny, Jennifer mentioned Colin Brophy there. And I remember on a good number of occasions, both in Oireachtas committees and in studios like this, and we'd start talking about, you know, the relative need for tax cuts and expenditure increases. And Colin would have been one of those sort of very pure Fine Gael deputies, if I can put it, who would have always talked about the importance of tax cuts on an ongoing basis. And I used to, well, I still do, I chair the annual National Economic Dialogue. And what used to strike me every year when we did this was you had huge discussions around the need for improved public services, investment and everything like that. And there wasn't actually a huge number of people who were talking for tax increases. But Fine Gael continually did sort of seem to, you know, talk about the importance of tax cuts and everything like that. But, you know, the reality is the tax measures in this week's budget were, you know, relatively small. There was only indexation to keep bans and allowances up with inflation. All the action was on the expenditure side. I mean, that's ultimately a political choice and, you know, good cases can be made for it. But I do think it's a really interesting shift in the sort of policy choices that are being made. Mm-hmm.
Well, Elaine, what do you think is going on then from a political point of view?
Yeah, well, I suppose as well, you have to remember the tax cuts and even the adjusting of the tax bands that was done in this budget. They're incredibly expensive for what you get back. You know, the average worker will probably only see around €400 next year change to their salary as a result of this adjustment to the tax bands, which is minuscule for the amount of overall cost to the exchequer that measure will be. So maybe the government is copping on to say, well, look at those type of measures don't really make a substantial impact on the lives of people and are not really seen. Whereas if we do other measures, and I know obviously that there are other measures such as the fiver and the pension, which, you know, will make an impact on a weekly basis to people, and maybe that's the way that they're thinking. But also over the past 18, 19 months now, I think the general public have changed their mindset. Give away budgets where you get a fiver here, a fiver there, everybody gets a little bit, I don't think really sit well with the general population.
So public services then is where it's at?
I think so, and people were very much aware that while everybody struggled throughout the pandemic, whether it was the pensioner who was cocooning, whether it was the parent alone trying to juggle both their job and being an educator, or the healthcare worker who had to go on the front line every day and put themselves at risk. Everybody struggled, but there are different levels of struggle. And we saw it on your own show with Adam Terry earlier on this week, that interview really had a massive impact, I think, on everyone who listened to it, including politicians. And perhaps that's the way they should be going, with more targeted measures that really have a big impact when they are done correctly. The problem with this year's budget is they kind of tried to do that, but they also tried the fiver giveaway to everyone. So really, it's a bit like asking a painter in to do your home, but getting him to do a corner of every room in the house. You really don't get much, or there's not a great impact for the money spent.
It's an 88 billion euro budget. I think a bit of context is necessary here. And a half a billion of that is in relation to tax cuts. Out of the overall, you know, we've just spent 48 billion euros on state supports, including public service investment and the direct transfers to people and businesses to support through COVID. It's an 88 billion euro budget. A half a billion of that is tax cuts. And, you know, with respect about the National Economic Dialogue, there's a lot of groups there who represent various sectors of society. But politicians like me are representing people on the doors day to day who don't have a voice often directly into those dialogues. The cost of living is increasing. We've seen inflation go up, particularly in August, as people have come out of COVID with more money in the economy, and also prices going up, particularly in August, particularly in particular sectors. The effort to index tax bands, that is something that happens across Europe and in much more left-leaning countries than Ireland, indexing it to try to protect people from the inflationary from inflation on their pay packets. That's what the effort is. It is an indexation. Yes, people will see an extra €400 on an average wage, and that's a good thing.
They probably won't see it, though.
That's my point. But if you didn't do it, they'd be €400 worse off. So this isn't a tax giveaway for lots of different people. First of all, it's a minuscule proportion of the overall budget. And second of all, it's directly targeted to try to address what we know are cost of living issues, particularly at the moment. We hope they're going to go down next year. We saw that in the budgetary documents. It's 3%, 3.7% at the moment. That's hopefully going to go down to 2.2% next year. We saw that it was off a particular spike from cars, planes and accommodation in August. We hope that that will settle itself next year, but we do have to respond. And also, it's a good thing overall from a social justice perspective to index tax bands to inflation.
What happens though if inflation doesn't do as you hope and come down next year? I saw some predictions that it could go to 4.5%.
Well, it could. We're in very uncertain territory with inflation. We haven't dealt with inflation for quite a while. It's just, you know, been dormant, if I can put it like that. The big worry often with inflation is it sort of gets into the system, okay, and then you get this knock-on wage effects, and then you have sort of policy responses. And once it gets into the system, it can be quite difficult to get it out. But just to, again, pick up some of Jennifer's point, I mean, she's absolutely right. It was a positive move, indexing bans and allowances, and everybody would be in favour of that. But I think the broad observation was merely around this notion that the tax component of the overall budget was very small compared to the expenditure component, and that's an interesting shift. But again, Elaine talked about this, and a lot of people have made this comment that it was sort of, you know, bits of actions here and there that didn't seem to add up to, you know, you can say that. But I have to say, in some of the areas, especially in the welfare packages, I thought they were actually very well targeted and cleverly targeted. OK, so if one of the things the ESRI has been talking about for quite a while is, for example, people who are much more likely to be at risk of poverty are children and lone parents and people living alone. And there's a range of groups that we know. So the old idea of simply having an across the board social welfare increase, you know, you can do that. It's incredibly expensive.
Like children's allowance, which wasn't touched.
Well, children's allowance is one of those problematic payments, and that, you know, even people like you and me get that, Claire. Okay.
So you're saying, can you tell me what you saw in the budget that you thought was clever and well targeted?
I think things like differential increases and things like living alone allowances. Okay, because people who are living alone are more likely to be in poverty, so that's a very sensible targeted measure.
Matt? Can I highlight one targeted, really important targeted measure where there was a big change, and that's around the means test, the eligibility for carers allowance, which there was a huge change there. People who are caring now for family members but are currently not getting any support from the state, they've changed the capital disregard, your savings in your bank, from €20,000 to €50,000, as well as making changes to the weekly payment. That will bring so many more families, carers are and anticipate thousands of families into the carers allowance structure. They should be getting support, and that's a big, big targeted change, first in 10 years.
Matt, what would you like to say about the lovely budget that we've just had?
I think one of the real difficulties is that there wasn't, and I beg to differ with you here, Alan, a targeted response to those sectors and those people who need it most. I have to say, I'm still astounded that the government didn't even pretend to support renters in any way. Well, the one cohort of society who are absolutely at the coalface of all the difficulties. I was struck by many people who are saying the only real difference that they're going to notice out of this budget is the fact that their fuel costs have increased, that their heating costs are going to increase.
And you can't,
on the one hand,
talk
about the cost of living. And yes, they have talked about the targeted in terms of fuel allowance. The vast majority of people who are in their cars this morning trying to get to work because they have no alternative means of transport
don't qualify for the fuel allowance.
So this is a budget, bizarrely, that managed to spend €88 billion euro and actually make people's lives worse.
I know ministers have said, from Leo Varadkar, I think Pascal Donoghue mentioned it again on Wednesday morning, that the tax changes will help deal with rent problems. You don't agree that that's the case?
No, and as I say, what was needed for renters was a specific targeted base. We put forward a tax credit proposal which would essentially put a month's rent back in people's pockets. That would need to be coupled with a ban on rent increases. Yeah. We have this ludicrous situation now where we have inflation rising, rents are linked to inflation, so we are going to have that cycle that one leads to another and rents will continue to
Minister
rise.
Did Minister O'Brien not say that's coming though?
Well,
it's on the agenda.
But coming, this is the difficulty with housing policy. Mm-hmm. Everything is coming too late. There was a time when Sinn Féin actually proposed a link of rents to inflation. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael at the time continually rejected it. By the time they brought in that policy, it was already too late.
Yeah.
So what we need is an actual ban on rent increases. We obviously need to see an acceleration of house building programmes that will actually take the pressure off the market. But at the moment we've seen, and what we saw this week, was a budget that said to all of those people who are in rented accommodation, who are paying exorbitant levels of rent, the highest in Europe, and they got absolutely nothing.
But you have mentioned there inflationary increases. So rent, one thing, and you also touched on fuel. But your party would have spent a lot more in this budget, €3.5 billion. What would that have done to prices, to flood the economy with that money? It would have just driven prices up again.
Again, all of our proposals were targeted at areas that actually are desperately in need. So we can't say on the one hand and have debates and talk compassionately about people on housing health waiting lists, waiting for urgent treatment, if we're not putting in the investment to actually undo that. We can't talk about then recognising the pressures that are on people who are at the mercy of a ruthless housing market at the moment and not put in place the investment that actually addresses that. We can't say that we hear the pleas from families and workers who are overburdened with energy costs and then at the same time add to their costs in the budget that was supposed to be about easing the pressure that they're
under.
One thing that's not coming that has been delivered and that 28,000 individuals and couples in this country have already benefited from is the Help to Buy scheme, which was specifically targeted at rent renters who were trying to get a deposit with their tax back. It's not cash from the state, it's a tax return to them to help them get on the get a first home. Sinn Féin wants to abolish that. They want to give you a month's rent back, but actually the inflationary pressure was from accommodation predominantly in August. Giving that,
that credit back is a direct inflationary measure
as well. So, you know, so you have to be very careful about what you're saying here. There are more people than just renters struggling. There are people across the board. I've talked about carers. There are people paying mortgages. There are people living in all sorts of different circumstances. And this budget was about stabilising things from post-COVID, moving into the next. It's about supporting business. It's about supporting everybody because everybody is facing difficulties. And it's about getting the public finances back in a respectable state. And we're actually a year ahead of schedule on that, which is a phenomenal achievement, not by the government, but by the economy.
Our time. Do you want to say something for 10 seconds?
The government had an opportunity this week and they missed it.
All right. Thank you very much indeed. I can't believe we're out of time, but we are. Alan Barrett, Elaine Loughlin, Matt Carthy and Jennifer Carroll McNeil, thank you very much indeed. And you can listen back to this item online or any of our shows by going to rte.ie/podcast or wherever you get your podcast from. That's it for today and indeed for the week. Thank you for listening. Today's programme was produced by Deirdre Neil Lyon, the series producers Alistair McConnell, research by Niamh Lyons. Our broadcast coordinator is Louise Kerr Ross. Liam Mullen was on sound, and it's over now at just coming up to 12 midday to Ronan Collins.